This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge, and for Frank Stacio. He's been named among the most influential people in the world by Time, Fortune, Politico, and Foreign Policy magazine. Mark Edwards is the professor who blew the whistle on the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. But his fight for clean water started long before Flint became national news. He uncovered lead contamination in Washington, D.C. in 2003. A few years later, in 2006, he worked on lead leaching in drinking water right here in Durham, North Carolina. Mark Edwards is professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech. He joins me in the studio. Mark, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So take us back to 2003, when you first started getting calls from residents of Washington, D.C. about the water quality in their homes. What kind of questions did they have for you?
Their questions were mainly about the plumbing being eaten up by the water and actually forming holes that would create leaks in their house. But about that time, I also was hired by the US EPA to work on what they said was a lead problem, and that's what I do. And little did I know that this was the most catastrophic lead contamination event in modern US history, and that the EPA had known about it for several years, and we were soon to be on a collision course that would lead me to no longer be working with the EPA. But, that was the scene.
And what did you find in these D.C. residents' drinking water?
I had measured lead in some of the homes, and the levels were so high that they were off the charts for my field device. And they literally classified it as hazardous waste in a few cases. There were homes over 100 parts per billion, literally about 10,000 Washington, D.C. homes, at levels so high that they're equal to the dose of lead in a turn-of-the-century lead abortion pill that women used to take to control family size, and 20% of homes in D.C. with lead pipes. So these were astronomical values, and unfortunately, the environmental policemen that we pay to protect us knew about it, covered it up, silenced whistleblowers who were trying to make these concerns public. And it ultimately led to, I think, what is one of the most horrific betrayals of the public trust in U.S. history by government science agencies.
So I want to talk about this. Your crusade for water safety in a number of cities really begins with this problem in D.C., and you start spending your own money to investigate it. Walk us through your thought process in taking on this issue in Washington.
Well, as I said, initially it started out as a routine job where I was hired by the EPA to solve what I thought was a routine lead problem, but it turned out to be not the case. It was a problem that was completely owned by the federal government almost from start to finish, because the Army actually treats the water in Washington, D.C., and the EPA is the primacy agency. And the reason the lead started to fall off the pipes into the water was because a new EPA regulation had caused a change in chemistry. And we didn't know it at the time, but that would trigger a lead release that no one had expected. So it started out as just me working on this problem and trying to get it fixed, and then realizing that I wasn't being told the whole truth, to say the least, that I was being given misinformation that was impeding my ability to solve this problem. And I got this gnawing sense in my stomach that there was something horribly going wrong here, which it later turned out to be true. I didn't know about the whistleblowers or the fact they'd known about this for years. But ultimately, the public became aware of it. It was front page in the Washington Post, one of the biggest news stories of 2004. At one point, there were 7 congressional investigations looking into this. There were lead was high in the U.S. Congress. President Bush was asked twice whether he was drinking too much lead in the White House water. And all hopes that we had to learn something positive from this experience about the mistakes and how to avoid them in the future were unfortunately derailed by a falsified scientific report by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, where they claim no one got hurt miraculously. And of course, unfortunately, everyone believed that. And the takeaway messages from D.C. were, incredibly enough, that children could drink high levels of lead in water and not get hurt. And if you do the right thing, you might get fired at these agencies. And oh, by the way, if you do the wrong thing, we will protect you.
in 2006, you were hired to look into concerns about drinking water safety here in North Carolina. First, what did you find about what was going on here in our state?
What was so fascinating about Durham was that the local health department here identified children with elevated lead in their blood, and they discovered that the normal sources, which are lead paint, lead in soil, were not a factor, that it really was the high lead in water. And so for me, this was a defining moment because what it implied is what we had known about the dangers of lead in water for 2,000 years of human history, going back to Roman days, which is if people drink too much lead in water, they get lead poison, that the fundamental chemistry and biology of that had not changed, that when kids were exposed to levels of lead in Durham that were actually lower than those in D.C. that supposedly didn't hurt anyone, that didn't elevate people's blood lead in D.C., children got hurt here. So it was in dealing with the honest efforts of the local health department here and realizing that something had gone horribly wrong in D.C. where this problem was completely covered up that was instrumental in me ultimately mounting a six-year effort in D.C. to expose the scientific misconduct by the U.S. EPA, by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, where these falsified scientific reports were written. And it was just a horrible experience from start to finish for me.
But here in Durham, you found a more open and willing government system to say, here's what we've got and here's the truth of what.
Absolutely. And the fact that the system worked as it should here in Durham was not only encouraging to me, but it caused me to go back and reexamine what went wrong in our nation's capital 2 years prior.
The next life-changing phone call that you get comes a few years later in 2015. A mother of two boys living in Flint, Michigan, wants to know more about the drinking water at her house. What was that call like and what did you do right after?
Unfortunately, I was expecting a call. After we exposed the misconduct that occurred in D.C. and this bipartisan congressional investigation found that the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, had behaved in a scientifically indefensible manner. Again, one hopes that we have an ability to learn from our mistakes and the agencies will take steps. They'll admit their wrongdoing. They will take steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. But unfortunately, the attitude of the CDC was, we've done nothing wrong and you can't make us say we're sorry and we're not going to change. And so when these agencies refuse to admit their mistakes, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. So we were preparing for the day when another Washington, D.C. was going to occur. And when I got this call from a Flint resident in 2015, what I realized was this was it. This mom had a living experiment in front of her in the form of twin boys, and the growth of one was mentally and physically stunted. And, of course, she was asking why. She figured out, Miss Leanne Walter, she figured out that that child had elevated lead in his blood. She figured out the source was lead in water. And she further figured out that the city and state had lied about following federal corrosion control law to the EPA. And, of course, one implication of that is lead in water gets high. So this mom in Flint figured out all of these things on her own.
And when you started, just people I'm sure have heard about this crisis in Flint, but when you got there, when things started to be uncovered, what did we find about what was going on in Flint's water system?
Well, initially I was working with a truly amazing and heroic EPA employee. His name is Mr. Miguel Del Toro, and he heard about this situation from this Flint mom and was just out of his mind with disbelief that they could not be following federal corrosion control law and endangering the entire city. So initially I worked with this EPA employee, and we knew that there are these structural impediments to EPA doing their job and to enforcing federal law, and we were trying desperately to overcome them. And he ultimately set on a strategy of putting his career on the line to write a memo that outlined the fact that this entire city was in danger, and it was leaked to the press, and we kind of together thought, okay, this is, you know, EPA is going to be forced to do their job. They're going to be forced to implement federal law. And unfortunately, that's not what happened. Miguel got retaliated against. He was told by EPA ethics officer to not speak to anyone from Flint or about Flint again. And the state started bragging about the fact that they had handled Mr. Del Toro to Flint residents and that no one would be helping them. So it was only after the system had failed completely. We'd worked diligently to get EPA to do their job. And in fact, EPA was the hero. It was all set up for them to be the hero. And unfortunately, Mr. Del Toro's management snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, if you will, and became complicit at that point in what is now considered, and I believe to be, one of the worst environmental crimes in U.S. history.
And in terms of why, let's say, Flint's water was full of lead but Detroit's wasn't, what had happened? What had caused the lead contamination in Flint's water supply?
For several decades, Detroit had been using a chemical called orthophosphate, and it keeps lead on the pipe and out of the water. And this is the basis of federal corrosion control law. And when Flint switched its water source temporarily, while a pipeline was being built, a civil servant or civil servants forgot to follow federal law. They forgot to put that corrosion inhibitor in the water. And this is, it's not a money-saving issue. You know, everyone who studies this knows that for every dollar you spend on corrosion control, you save $10 in damage to your pipe infrastructure. You keep bacteria levels lower. You keep lead on the pipes. This is why we have a law. And Flint was amongst the only cities in the United States that did not have a plan to control corrosion in violation of that law.
You've talked about how all of speaking out against the EPA and these problems has meant that you've lost friends in the fight. You know, tell us more about the personal fallout for you over these decades, you know, working as you have.
Well, I am someone who loves the EPA. I love everything they stand for. And I guess if you criticize what you love, I could be accused of loving EPA more than anyone. But, you know, the danger of having unethical science and engineering agencies, the danger of our environmental policemen becoming environmental criminals, as was the case in Flint, it's almost too horrible to think about. We can't live in a world where that's allowed to happen. I mean, these are people that we pay to protect us. We have to trust them. And if they become untrustworthy, what can people trust in the world? And this has played out in a horrific way in Flint after they realized that they had been lied to by the state and in US EPA. That the water was safe when it wasn't. They're now inclined to believe the exact opposite, that the authorities tell them, even if the authorities are now, as they are, doing the right thing and doing the best they can to help them. Since the declaration of the federal emergency in January 2016, I have only positive things to say about the federal and state response. It's truly been amazing. But it is simply the fact that science, you know, we're very much conformist. We're very, we are the last people. We have all this freedom, academic freedom in the form and tenure, but we're also the greatest generation of cowards in U.S. history because we're the last people to exercise that freedom. And why? Because if you speak out against a funding agency, you are committing professional suicide. You will lose your funding. You will lose friends. That has happened to me. I probably lost 80% of the friends I had when I started on this journey.
It seems kind of counterintuitive because if you've got, you know, saying, wait a second, we've got a problem here. We have to fix it. Children are being hurt. Everyone would try to jump on to your side as quickly as possible.
Well, if that were the world we lived in, that would be a wonderful place. But as you know, that's not how we treat whistleblowers. If you look up whistleblower in the dictionary, it has all these negative connotations. You're a stool pigeon. You're a stoolie. And why is that? It's because these people are more loyal to the truth and to humankind than to their institutions and their friends. And we so value loyalty to our friends and to our institutions that if you betray that, even for a higher purpose, we're going to punish you. One of the most concerning things I saw in Washington, D.C. was five ethical, honest people tried to alert the public about the danger from the high lead in water or the corruption at these agencies. They were fired. And so if you live in a world where good, honest people in these agencies are being fired and unethical people are being promoted and are being retained, you get agencies where something like occurred in Flint, Michigan is not only likely, it's inevitable.
And tell me now, Flint returned to Detroit's water system. Give us a sense of how safe the water is at this point in Flint.
On the basis of the unprecedented monitoring that's occurring, this is the best monitored system in the world, the most closely scrutinized system in the world right now, and rightly so. All the data has seemed to show that the water is probably better than it's ever been. But so profound is the loss of trust that there are many, many residents who believe that it's actually getting worse every day. They think it's making them sick. I have residents who are highly educated, very rational people who tell me point blank that thank you so much for what you did and I trust you completely, but I will never drink tap water again. I know residents in Flint who will never take a bath or shower again. They feel so betrayed. And given their life journey, you can't argue with that. And so, you know, we really have to emphasize the need for scientists and engineers to be trustworthy and ethical, because we can't live in a world where people believe the exact opposite of what scientists and engineers tell us.
I'm speaking with Mark Edwards, who blew the whistle on the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, today on The State of Things. President Trump's proposed budget would cut the Environmental Protection Agency's funding by 31%. What kind of effect do you think that might have on access to healthy water in the United States?
It's difficult to think that it's going to have any positive effect. I do see that there's some hopeful bipartisan signs that people are now recognizing the dangers of this antiquated infrastructure and water systems, and that we will get money mobilized to upgrade that infrastructure, which we now know these old pipes can actually kill people. Not only can they cause elevated lead in children's blood, but as in the case of Flint, Michigan, these old pipes actually contributed to an outbreak of Legionnaire's disease, one of the worst in U.S. history, that left 12 Flint residents dead as a result of failure to follow federal corrosion control law. So I'm very hopeful, eternally optimistic, and, you know, that's the case here. There is this area of bipartisan agreement that we have to get infrastructure upgraded. We also do need to reform these institutions, and I don't think the most productive path is to reduce their budget. However, I will point out that unless we get these institutions fixed, they are going to be increasingly a target, and rightly so, of people who feel betrayed by science.
Just finally, you know, on April 22nd, scientists are preparing to head to Washington to march for U.S. science policy. Should scientists also be activists?
Well, I mean, we live in interesting times, and the rift between science and society has become so profound that we're now faced with the prospect that scientists are actually marching to bring attention to our plight. And of course, at least figuratively, society has been marching on science, I think, for perhaps 10 years, and to some extent with good reason, because of the very reasons I mentioned. We are too frequently not deserving of the public trust. And so you can respond to adversity in one of two ways. You can say, who did this to us? And that's the knee-jerk response. And to try to harm those people. Or you can also say, how did we do this to ourselves? And I can see both sides of that argument right now on this very question, but I come down clearly on the side of the fact that we have done this to ourselves, and we have to get our own house in order in science and engineering and once again be worthy of the public trust. And that's also something we control, and I know we don't want to talk about it, but it's a very important issue, and if we do not get this fixed, we will enter a new dark age.
Mark Edwards blew the whistle on the water crisis in Washington, D.C. and in Flint, Michigan. He's also a professor of civil and environmental engineering at Virginia Tech. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Just ahead, how could the new health care proposal impact women's health? We'll discuss. Please stay with us.